Hello, Juno. Welcome to the Monday, April 8th edition of Juno Afternoon. I'm your Monday host, Joan Partis. I'm back in the studio after several weeks out of town. It's great to be back. We've got a great show, and it's an exciting week in Juno. Today, we're going to be talking with Hospice and Home Care of Juno about the walk that they have this Saturday. We'll have some TV talk with Tim Olson. We'll also have Christian Fabian and Ed Littlefield in the studio talking about the Native Jazz Quartet concert tonight. And then we will talk by telephone to Dan Henry up in Skagway about Northward's Writer Symposium at the end of May. As for weather, the rain is happening. It will be raining tonight, lows around 38. Tomorrow, windy and rain. Tuesday night, looking like some snow showers. So the rain is back, but it's going to be a warm and welcoming week in Juneau. It's Juneau Folk Fest and lots going on. Next up, Alaska Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A powerful winter storm is working its way toward South Dakota from the Rocky Mountains. The strong low-pressure system is expected to combine with moisture from the Gulf of Mexico to create dangerous conditions later today. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Elmbolt reports.
Travel conditions are forecast to become difficult or impossible in parts of southwest South Dakota tonight and Tuesday, including on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. Kyle Karstens is with the National Weather Service in Rapid City.
Yeah, we're looking for quite a bit of heavy snow starting this evening and through tonight into tomorrow across western South Dakota. You know, areas along and south of Interstate 90 is probably where the heaviest accumulations are, especially across southwest South Dakota, where there could be some places that'll see upwards of 14 to 16 inches of snow.
A winter storm warning is in effect for south central South Dakota, with winter storm watches covering most of the state on either side of the warning area. The Lower Brule, Crow Creek, and Rosebud reservations are in the warning area for later today through Tuesday night. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
A South Dakota tribe is raising awareness about substandard housing conditions with a motorcade from its reservation to Washington, D.C. The Oglala Sioux Tribe's Housing Authority announced plans for the journey last week. Jim Kent reports.
With a reputation for being situated in one of the poorest counties in the country, Housing Authority Director Paul Ironcloud says the problem of adequate housing on the Pine Ridge Reservation is out of control.
We've got two, three families, sometimes four families living in one house, and it's pretty hard on education. Our kids go to school, you know, how do they do their homework in the evenings? There's so many factors that apply to this. We need more houses.
Ironcloud estimates the need for a minimum of 4,000 houses on the Pine Ridge Reservation, but he adds the housing problem doesn't just apply to South Dakota reservations.
We're not only talking for Pine Ridge, you know, we need houses clear across the United States.
The Oglala Sioux Housing Authority's cross-country motorcade will bring the facade of an existing overcrowded substandard Pine Ridge home to the streets of the nation's capital. Named the Trail of Hope for Indian Housing, the journey begins April 13th. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
Funeral services are being planned for Shoshone Paiute Chairman Terry Gibson. According to the Associated Press, the 52-year-old died last week after suffering a heart attack. In the 1990s, he helped convince the U.S. Air Force to relocate a planned bombing range away from the tribe's reservation on the Idaho-Nevada border. Before his death, Gibson was said to be working on a casino project in Idaho. Services will be held Tuesday on the Duck Valley Reservation. Over the weekend, Oklahoma and Nebraska tribes held a unique ceremony. According to the Associated Press, the Omaha, Ponca, and Oto, Missouri tribes met in Nebraska. They held a tobacco giving ceremony to renew friendships and historic bonds. Leaders smoked together as their ancestors had once done at different locations in the past. Organizers say the last such gathering was held 50 years ago. The ceremony was open to the public. Two Native American sisters and their college basketball team are advancing to the NCAA championship. The University of Louisville women's team won over California Sunday night in the semifinals in New Orleans. with the help of sisters Shoni and Jude Schimmel. The Cardinals were down by 10 points at halftime, but they came out with a 64-57 win. Fans across Indian country are rallying around the sisters, who are from the Confederated Umatilla Reservation in Oregon. The game was the third straight upset for Louisville. They will take on Connecticut Tuesday night. During this month in 2012, First Nation elders and former Indian residential school students adopted Archbishop James Weisgerber. The ceremony in Winnipeg was a gesture of reconciliation between the Catholic Church and former students. Many students reported abuse at the church-run, government-funded schools throughout Canada. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Hello, you are listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. I'm your Monday host, Joan Pardis. Here in the studio, I have Colleen Jones of Hospice and Home Care of Juno and Lori Yorba, who is the race director of Hospice and Home Care's upcoming event. Welcome, ladies, to the studio.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
It's great to have you. So let's talk about this event. It looks like there is a 5K run, 1 mile walk this Saturday at Twin Lakes. So, Lori, why don't you tell me a little bit about this event?
Okay, this is our eighth year of doing this fundraiser for Hospice and Home Care of Juno. It's the heart of Hospice Run, and the 5K is a 3.1-mile run. What we do is we start you out at the shelters, you run through the parking lot to the pump station, turn around, and you run the length of the two lakes, you run off of the road, past the Pioneer Home, down to the little Coast Guard office, turn around and you come back and you end up at the shelters. So that's both for the 5K and the 1 mile. And it starts at 9 o'clock a.m.
That sounds great. And this is an important fundraiser for Hospice and Home Care, correct?
Yes. Correct.
And it looks, I have the flyer here, it looks like you have probably 24, if not more, supporters as far as local businesses.
Oh, absolutely. We have about 50-plus people that have contributed and supported the race in a variety of ways. So we are so grateful.
That's great. But let's before we get talk about the sponsors and what they've done and the great prizes and awards that people could get, let's talk about if you are a runner or a walker and you want to be involved, how do people get involved?
Well, you can sign up early. Early registration is really encouraged, and you can do that at Pavitt's Fitness. You can do it at both the JRCs, at the Nugget Alaskan Outfitter at the Nugget Mall, or at Hospice and Home Care itself, the office on 6th Street. So that would be a great way to pre-register, but you can also register the morning of the race. We'll be there at 8 o'clock, 8:15, 8:30. Please come and sign up then. It is cheaper if you pre-register, so that's an incentive. $5, it's $15 for 18 and younger if you pre-register, and it goes up $5 after that. And the same for adults, it's a $20 registration fee early and then $25 the morning of.
Okay.
And you want to register before 4 o'clock.
Yeah. Right, 4 o'clock on Friday.
Friday.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then when you register, you come, you show up, and what can people expect besides the course, which you just described? I hear that there are some prizes and awards.
Well, we will have munchies. What kind of food do we have?
We'll just have some fruits and some maybe bagels and cookies and stuff like that. And then they'll have the Gatorade and water. But we do have a few prizes that we will randomly draw from all the folks that have registered. And we have Cycle Alaska has donated bike tune-up. We have some tram passes that the tram has donated, and I think we may have a few other little gifts. But we also have great T-shirts that every participant will receive, so that's a fun, incentive maybe.
Absolutely. And you have a price break for 18 and under and 19 and older. So I'm assuming this is a family-friendly event that
Absolutely.
Everybody can participate.
Absolutely. We'd
yes.
love as many as possible that want to come out. And, you know, it's a nice way to start your Saturday.
It sounds great. And your spring, it is spring. Mm-hmm. And so let's talk a little bit about Hospice and Home Care of Juneau. So this is a fundraiser for that organization. So I'm looking at Colleen Jones
mm-hmm.
From Hospice.
Yeah.
And tell me, what does the organization do?
Well, hospice provides, we have a few programs. It's hospice and home care, and so hospice is, folks that are nearing their end of life, and we provide, skilled nursing care in the home for that period of time until a patient passes. And then also the in-home care is folks that are either leaving the hospital or have serious illness and they are homebound and need nursing care in the home. So we provide that as well. But we also have a great team of professionals, from the social workers, the physical therapists, speech therapists, occupational therapists, chaplains, and then we have volunteers that also help, with respite for the family when they need a break. And I also have volunteers that help with the fundraisers and then also transporting medical equipment to and from the home. So if somebody needs a hospital bed, they help me bring those to the places. So it's a great team effort of providing a multitude of skills to families in need. So we work very closely with the physicians in town and outside when somebody is returning or whatever. So
right. Actually, I asked that question because I wanted you to answer the question, but I know of hospice and home care. I had hospice and home care for my father, and it was an amazing experience, and
great.
The team was top-notch. I have absolutely nothing negative to say. All I have to say is that it was a phenomenal experience, and the care and support.
That is how I started directing the race, is I got a call from someone at hospice saying, we want to raise some money for hospice. Would you like to direct a race? And it was just mm-hmm. after my grandfather had passed away, and hospice had just provided so much help and care to him on his journey mm-hmm. to the next mm-hmm. life. And it just made sense to help out here. And they're angels. Hospice are nurses, and the caregivers are angels.
It's an amazing team. Mm-hmm. It really is a group of amazing professionals. So let's talk about, if someone's listening and saying, mm-hmm. I do want to volunteer at hospice, how would they do that?
Well, they could definitely contact us at our office at 463-6111. You can always go online. The CCS web page also has links of volunteer opportunities, and hospice is in there as well. But probably the best way is to give us a call and speak with one of us, for sure. And if you wanted to just continue, it's not too late to donate and help sponsor this race. You can definitely call again, the 463-6111, or there's an option online as well at that website at ccsjuno.org, where there's a donate button. And then just make sure you type in that you want it to go to hospice and home care, and we will definitely direct it that way.
Right. So on the web, you could just search for Hospice and Home Care of Juneau, and you'll go to the Catholic Community Service webpage, and then from there it'll be very easy.
Correct.
But if you're interested in doing the race, either walking or running or some version of both,
mm-hmm.
you can definitely
That's
do
great.
It this Saturday. And pre-registration, 4 o'clock would be best. If you just joined us, I'm in the studio with Colleen Jones and Lori Yarber. We are talking about the 5K Heart of Hospice Run this Saturday, 9 a.m. at Twin Lakes. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks
Thank you for
having
us.
Moving in silent desperation, keeping an eye on the Holy Land. A hypothetical destination. Say, who is this walking man? Well, the leaves have come to turn in, and the goose has gone to fly.
bridges awful burning, so don't you let that yearning pass you by. Walking man, the walking man walks. Well, any other man stops and talks, but the walking man walks. Well, the frost is on the pumpkin, and the hay is in the barn, yeah. Happy's come to ramble and all, stumbling around, drunk down on the farm. And the walking man walks, he doesn't know nothing at all.
Hello, I'm Dr. Elaine Schroeder. Please join me this coming Monday at 7 p.m. for Mind Over Matter. A special guest and I will have a conversation about the challenges and joys of living life fully and of living a life with meaning. So tune in to KTOO this Monday at 7 p.m.
Hello, you're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm your Monday host, Joan Pardis, and we just heard that promo for Elaine Schroeder's show, Mind Over Matter. That's tonight at 7 p.m. Her special guest is Claire Richardson, who will be talking about the American way of dying. This is a great show. Tune in, please. Speaking of great shows, I'm here with our TV guy, our KTOO TV guy, Tim Olson, in the studio. Hi, Tim. How are you?
How are you?
I'm great. Good. I'm great. So tell me what's going on in TV world.
Well, we have some interesting things happening. The most of interesting thing happening this week is that we're kind of pitching in a little bit with KRNN and the radio stations. We're going to do a video web streams of the Folk Festival this week, starting tonight at 7 o'clock.
Is that new? Is this the first time?
It is new. You know, KRNN has done a broadcast of the Folk Festival for years, as everyone knows, and everybody likes to listen to that. If they can't be at the hall or whatever, what's going on, that's how everyone keeps in touch with the Folk Festival. So this year we're just adding one little thing. The TV folks rolled out a camera over at Centennial Hall, so you'll be able to sort of keep an eye on what's happening while you're listening to the broadcast on KRNN.org. So we're going to have the usual broadcast, and we're also going to have like the webcast web stream that's going to have video with it. So we think that's going to be kind of fun, and it gives everybody to have a like surveillance camera in the hall and see what's happening over at the big event this week, and we're going to do that every night. So that's, you know, kind of a fun thing in the way that the TV folks can participate and help out and also get to be involved in the Folk Fest.
So, oh, that sounds great. So if people want to do that, they just go to ktoo.org.
KRNN.org. Oh. They're going to be broadcasting the event live, and it's going to be on the website there. So there's a lot of different ways that people can participate at the Folk Fest, or if they don't happen to be there at the moment, they can keep in touch until they get back to the event. They can listen to the broadcast, they can listen to the web stream, they can watch the web stream and see what's happening at the event and watch the stage too.
That's so great. So yes, not only are you going to be able to listen, you'll know what people are wearing
you
as well.
Can see when they're changing acts, you get to see what's happening, you can see what people are wearing, right? You can see when Colette changes clothes. So
that's good. That's good. That's great, actually. That's a wonderful addition.
Other TV stuff, you know, I come in and talk about things that I think might be of interest to people. One of the things we're interested in is what's going to happen when the legislature finishes its work. Day 90 is Sunday. A lot of Juno people know that. Makes a big difference on TV because we're covering a lot of legislative meetings right now. And we go back to our non-Gavel Alaska schedule starting on Monday, we think. On Monday during the day, we'll be doing wrap-up of everything that's happened during the session and press conferences and that type of coverage. Monday night, barring any changes in the legislative schedule, which is something that people in Juno also know about. That
it's
can happen.
Subject to change.
It's subject to change. If they were to stick around for a little while longer, you know, we would accompany that, and we would take care of that and do the broadcast and put our schedule, what, you know, whatever we would need to do with the schedule to accommodate that. But, you know, we go back to our having 2 hours of newscasts every night on TV. We start at, you know, from 6 to 8 p.m. We have two BBC newscasts that are different. We have a newscast from NHK called Newsline and Alaska Weather. So we're going to go back to our normal schedule and then have our Alaska programming starting at 8 p.m. every night. And we're sort of looking forward to that. And we're also looking forward to how the big cliffhanger of the legislative calendar ends on Sunday night. One of the things that's been a big project that we've been working on lately is this anniversary project on the Alaska Marine Highway. And That the first of those documentaries aired recently, and it's going to be airing again on 360 North at the end of the month on the 24th of April, which is a Wednesday, and that following Sunday, the 28th of April. Another opportunity to see the Alaska's Marine Highway Episode 1, and then the national distribution for that program starts on May 15th.
That sounds great. But let's talk about that in case people are not up to speed about this project. Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about this?
Well, we figured Jeff Brown, somebody everyone knows, mentioned a couple years ago that this 50th anniversary was coming up, and we had done a lot of work with the anniversary of statehood, but this was another big 50th that the Marine Highway was going to be celebrating a 50th anniversary, and maybe there was something we could all do to participate in that. So we decided we were going to make an oral history and television project out of it, and we've been working on it for about a year. And it's going to culminate in four public television programs during this anniversary year, which is 2013. One of them aired recently and is going to go into national distribution in May for feeding to all the other public television stations in the country. Another one is being shot in May on a historic voyage of the Malaspina that's going to retrace, and you probably have heard about this, retrace the first trip of the Malaspina when it was its inaugural voyage. We're going to have a crew embedded on this recreation of that trip and traveling around Southeast. And then there are two other programs that are going to include a lot of the material we've gathered with former crew, captains, people who have used the Marine Highway for years, and people from communities all throughout Alaska who have counted on the ferry system for various reasons. We have the oral history collection is going to be turned into some long format oral history storytelling project documentaries about the 50th anniversary. So over the course of 2013, all four of the programs will air. So that's something big and fun that we're working on.
That sounds great. Let's go back to that Malaspina. So what they're doing, can you explain?
Yeah, the Marine Highway is planning a recreation of the inaugural voyage of the ship 50 years later. Mm-hmm. So the Malaspina and the Taku, I believe, and were built in like 1963, so this is 2013, and it's been 50 years. They're going to take a big handful of guests and travelers on board and stop in all of the original stops that ship made in Southeast Alaska, and there's going to be events at each community, and we're going to be making a program about that.
That sounds great. So if people are interested, they could just go to the Alaska Marine Highway System website,
right,
and jump on if there's still room.
They can be passengers for the mm-hmm. legs of that trip where there is still space, from what I understand. Some
or
of it may
in 6 months
full,
they could watch it on TV.
Right. Lots
maybe,
of opportunities.
Maybe not 6 months.
Yeah,
but I don't
it
know.
Will be airing in the fall probably. That's what, we're working on several things, juggling several projects at once as part of that Alaska Marine Highway project.
It sounds like an interesting project.
It's a fun one. Good Alaska history. Get to see a lot of Alaska faces. Mm-hmm. And we're providing the program, at least the first one, to other people in the country so they can kind of get an Alaska story told by Alaskans rather than watching programs as we do sometimes that are take place in Alaska but are produced by people from somewhere else.
Right, and the Marine Highway is so unique. It's
very
just
unique.
An amazing. Yeah. It's a lovely way to travel.
We had a premiere of the first program and showed it to a bunch of people who had participated, and they really enjoyed it. And we've heard really good things, and we hope that everyone in the United States likes it when they see it.
Yeah.
And maybe they'll want to come up and visit us.
I'm sure they will. I missed that, but I'm definitely going to check it out. It sounds really
nice. We'll be airing again
town.
A couple times at the end of the month, and then there will be other episodes coming along every few months here throughout the anniversary year 2013.
Okay.
Here.
Specifically, when is that re-airing again? You said that a little while ago, but now that we've talked about it, when is
it? Yeah. On April 24th at 9 p.m. It's a Wednesday night. That's one of our documentary slots where we put up new Alaska documentaries every week. And then it will repeat on that Sunday evening. That's the 28th at 8 p.m., which is where we usually have our best of the week programs on Sunday night. We run the best Alaska programs from that previous week.
Great.
That Alaska Marine Highway Project is also running subsequent to the Alaska Statehood Pioneers Project, which is something else we created this year, which is another fun one. I think the other night we had Jay Hammond on talking about his involvement in the early days of Alaska politics. Many of the people that are in that series are no longer alive or with us, but we managed to do a great deal of recording of interviews about 10 years ago and have that series is going to be running for 10 more weeks. So that's on Wednesday nights as well in that documentary Alaska slot. So
that sounds wonderful. That sounds really, really interesting.
Yeah, we've got some great Alaska programs that we've been working on, and we have something every week now. So, you know.
That sounds good. Anything else coming down the pike?
Well, I mentioned that we like to plan for what's going to happen after the legislature adjourns, and we're assuming they're going to adjourn. So I said that, you know, next week we go back to our schedule with 2 hours of news and weather, Alaska news and weather, every night from 6 to 8 p.m., and then we're going to go back to our schedule of having Alaska science and health programs on Monday, things like Science for Alaska. We dedicate Monday nights to that kind of programming. Tuesdays will continue and go back to being dedicated to programs about Alaska Native people and Native American people. We'll have those documentaries on Wednesday nights with Alaska Statehood Pioneers and other great Alaska programs that we're acquiring. Every night of the week there's something interesting and exciting, and we still plan on having specials and other Alaska specials on Saturday night, like recently Poetry Out Loud. We had the wearable art event from here in Juneau, and we specialize in those types of programs on Saturdays. So every night there's something of interest of Alaska content on 360 North, and we'll continue to cover the legislature till it concludes.
That sounds great. Tim, thank you so much
for
walking down the hall and joining
us today.
Thanks
for having me in.
All right, next up we're going to be talking with Native Jazz Quartet. They'll be here in the studio, so stay tuned.
This is Bird Note. When a canyon wren sings, the brilliance of its descending notes can stop you right in your tracks. But when its cousin, the marsh wren, sings, you may reach for your earplugs. Why do two closely related birds sing such contrasting songs? One sweetly musical, one harsh, jarring, and repetitive. The answer lies in where they sing. For a song to be effective, for it to be heard loudly and clearly by others of its species, the song must carry well in the bird's habitat. The canyon wren inhabits canyons and cliffs, a domain of hard stone. Its silvery notes bounce wonderfully across its stony realm. In contrast, marsh wrens sing from deep within dense reeds and cattails. Their songs are loud and low-pitched, flurries of short, hard notes, songs evolved to power through a mass of vegetation. We humans may find one wren song more pleasing to the ear than the other, but in the wren's world, where song is essential to attracting mates and repelling rivals, it's all about being heard. Today's show brought to you by the Bobolink Foundation.
The Thunder Mountain High School Departments of Theater and Music proudly present the classic story of The Wizard of Oz. Somewhere over the rainbow, in a magical land of munchkins and witches, Dorothy and her friends, Scarecrow, Tin Man, and Lion, look for the important things. A brain, a heart, courage, and most importantly, home. Bring the family to the Thunder Mountain High School Auditorium for closing weekend, this Thursday, April 11th through Saturday, April 13th. Shows start at 7 p.m. Tickets available at hearthsidejahc.org and at the door. There really is no place like home.
Hello, this is Juno Afternoon at on KTOO. I'm your host, Joan Partis. And in the studio right now, I have the Native Jazz Quartet. I have co-leaders Ed Littlefield from Sitka, European Native Christian Fabian, and Jason Marcellus of the famous Marcellus Jazz Family, and Ruel Lubeg. Hello, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
So welcome to Juno. Jason, we're going to start chatting with you, as I've been told by Christian. So, Jason, is this your first time in Alaska?
You know what? It actually is not. It's kind of crazy for me because just growing up, I had never been to Alaska at all and never thought that I would be. But then I started working with these gentlemen, and I've been here, I think, four times. Yeah. So it's been crazy. But this is my second time in Juneau, and I'm actually glad to be here on the radio because the last time we were here, I was actually sick and had a cold, and there was a radio interview, and I couldn't do it. Yeah. So when I found out there was another one today, I said, yes, I have to be there.
Well, thanks for being here. These guys are in the studio because there is a show tonight, 7 o'clock at the Jack. It will be this band and the Thunder Mountain Big Band. And actually, Jason and Ruel will be sitting in with the Thunder Mountain.
Correct. I guess so.
Tell me where to go, and I'll go right there.
I suspect you guys might not be as obedient as you're putting it.
No, we're pretty obedient.
Is this your first time in Alaska?
Actually, it's kind of the same thing with Jason when Christian and Ed asked me to do the project, and then the tour came up. It was a chance to get up here, and I actually have some relatives who lived up in Fairbanks for a long time, never got to visit them. And of course, we went up there, and they were in Ohio, where they had a second home. So this is my – well, actually, we've done a couple other side trips up here since the last tour, so I'm rapidly finding Sitka to be kind of a second home, and just really love the people up here, and the atmosphere is – and Washington's a beautiful state, but the vistas here are, it's like Washington State on steroids, It's pretty amazing.
So you brought up Sitka. The four of you were part of the Sitka Fine Arts Camp last year, and you're doing that again this year.
A little bit different. We were part, Christian and I, this is Ed, Christian and I were doing the Sitka Fine Arts Camp for many years. Then we decided to do an outreach program kind of based on that, but mostly just based on the campus, called the Native Jazz Workshop. And the quartet, Jason, Ruel, myself, and Christian, are all going to be there on July 15th.
Okay.
For a second time.
That sounds wonderful. Ed, now that I have you talking, tell me about the Native Jazz Quartet. So what I've heard is that you blend a lot of different things together. So can we talk a little bit about the music?
Yeah, kind of the basis of the quartet songs are that we take our native backgrounds, whatever that may be. So, and for me, I was born and raised in Sitka. I grew up there listening to Thlinget songs for many years and studying them. And so what I use is mainly Thlinget Tlegus, which are children's songs that are public domain. And they have beautiful, great melodies that can be used in the jazz format. And so for me, that's what it means, taking my cultural background and putting them into songs. And these other guys have different stories as well, finding out new things about their culture, reinventing maybe some things that they did, were growing up, musical styles they were doing when they were growing up. And then taking, like what Christian does, is taking one song, taking a hymn from one of his ancestors that's 300 years old and making it a jazz piece. So that's kind of the basis of it and in a nutshell. And it's a very exciting music as well because it has a place where it comes from. It's not just a tune that we're playing. It has a story. So.
It sounds fantastic, and we will be listening to a piece when we're done with the interview, but while we have the guys in the studio, we'll be talking to the guys. So, Christian, let's hear about was it you and Ed who started how did you two meet?
Well, I'm going out to the Lion Hampton Jazz Festival since 97, actually, or 96, and at the University of Idaho, And Ed was a student at the University of Idaho. So I think I definitely remember him from, you know, there was always a greeting concert with Lionel Hampton where the students of U of I performed for Lionel Hampton, and Ed was a percussion major. So I just remember him sitting on the floor playing marimba and drums, and then they had this amazing percussion teacher called Dan Buckridge, and they did these things where they're all running around on stage picking up different instruments. So that's kind of the picture. But we actually started working together at the Sitka Fine Arts Camp in 2007, and we've been working ever since.
Yeah. So it's a recent collaboration.
Yeah, very recent. I mean, the band, the Native Jazz Quartet, is about 2.5 years that we are actually playing together as a band and recording together.
Right, and you have a new CD.
We have a new CD, yeah. It just came out, and called NJQ Stories, and we're going to play songs from the new CD tonight at 7 p.m. at the Jack. And it's going to be very special. We had some really exciting shows, and people are thrilled after the show. I mean, I know all the guys in the band. We have all kinds of people walking up, and they say, you know, we never heard it in that combination, you know, and it's really interesting, and the stories and the music. And basically, I mean, maybe Jason can talk about it a little bit. What we're doing, we take these melodies, and jazz, so to speak, is an open architecture, and we put them into the jazz background. But Jason can explain it in a little more detail.
That'd be great.
Yeah, well, really, this group started when we did a recording session. And to make a long story short, it was one of those sessions where I flew into Seattle in the morning and ate an apple and then went to the studio and started recording. And 5 hours later, we were done. And all I knew was that Christian was working on a CD, and that's a, yeah, I'll play on it. And then the next thing I knew, Ed Littlefield's working on a CD. I said, okay. But I didn't really quite get what was going on. I was just there reading music. Well, what? Oh, okay, let's go. Okay, play it, leave. And we did a gig later that night, which was great. And so I'm saying this to say that when the CDs finally came out and we did a tour, it was during a radio interview that I actually realized what was really going on. You know, Ed was talking about the native songs from Alaska and how he was bringing that to a jazz context. And I said, oh, yeah, this is folk music.
Yeah.
And I said, that's what this is. I said, yeah, well, you know, the original folk music of this music was blues. But the fact is you can pull folk music from anywhere. I mean, it can be European folk music. Folk music from, you know, music of the people, folk music from Hawaii, from India, from anywhere. And so that's what inspired this particular CD.
It sounds fascinating. Talk about so many different voices,
yeah,
just from what you're talking about.
Well, last night we were in...
this is Ruel talking.
Yeah, we were in Ketchikan, and there was a singer I was introduced to who sings in a local band with our host, Dale, what's Dale?
Curtis,
fine trumpet player, and she moved, recently moved to Ketchikan from Guam, and she's actually Filipino as well, and she recognized Leron Senta. She
knows
old
yeah,
music songs. You know, it's a traditional Filipino song that kids learn, and I said, oh yeah, we're going to play another one, you know, in the second set, Bahay Kubo, too. And she goes, oh, I know that one, too. So, there's this whole connection. Here's someone I'd never met who just moved to Alaska from the other side of the planet. And it's like, I know those songs. And then hearing them in the context with which we're doing it, it was like, you know, it's pretty amazing, you know,
right,
that connection.
It sounds great. I think we have to listen. So do you guys have some time to hang out with us a little bit?
Of course.
Bit?
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
Let's listen to this piece. So who wants to introduce this piece?
This is a tune from Louisiana. It's an old Creole song, and Creole is a variation of French, and it's called, the name of the song is Et Là-bas.
Great, let's do it.
Thank you.
Hello, this is Juno Afternoon. I'm in the studio with the Native Jazz Quartet. We're just listening to a piece from their new CD. It's not the complete piece. We're running out of time, but these guys are so interesting, we had to play. So what I was asking while we were listening is, so how does this happen? How does a piece like that happen? And Ruel was picked to talk about this. So you bring, each one of you brings something else to the party, bring something so unique. So how does the party really get going? How do you collaborate to make something like that happen?
Well, what's interesting about jazz is because there's always going to be a group concept that happens when you've got people who musically and artistically and even personally are kind of on the same page. So you've got that commonality that's already there. And then what we can each do as individuals, the way that we approach the music, we'll come up with an arrangement or a concept for what we want to have happen. We give that to the guys and let their own personalities and their own personal style infuse what they're going to add. So it's almost like having four chefs work on a dish, but because they've worked together and there's a familiarity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't actually have to step on each other. It works in a very complementary fashion. So, for example, for one of the pieces I did, Lerone, Lerone Sinta, I drew some of my influence from Ahmad Jamal to create the introduction and the ending, and just a really nice, relaxed swing feel on it. And, you know, once that concept was introduced, these guys have all listened to that music, and boom, we're off to the races. We played through a couple times, and, you know, if there was something that maybe stylistically I could recommend, oh, could we do this? Let's make this adjustment. And everyone goes, okay. You know, and if someone has something else to plug in, like, oh, what if, like on Du Gamla Du Fria, which is a Swedish melody, Christian wrote a melody that we double, and there's some chord punches that the trio does after the vibes takes a break. Well, what I was playing wasn't meshing, and it was like, well, why don't I just put the same note that Christian's playing in the bass, I voice it on the top, and let's see how that's, and all of a sudden, boom, everything fit into place. So I had to make an adjustment to what I was doing to make it fit and make the sound happen. Hmm. You know, or maybe Ed can do a rhythm that'll set up a certain feel, and everyone goes, oh, yeah, let's go there. But what's cool is when we're in performance, because of the spontaneity of the music and living in the moment, what we may have rehearsed, what we may have recorded, it could go a completely different direction, but it's like riding a horse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you never know what's coming up, and all of a sudden you got to, you know, turn this way or that way and make an adjustment, jump over a rock, and you let the landscape dictate where you're headed.
Yeah, that's the excitement and beauty of jazz, what Christian was saying, the open architecture.
Yeah. It's actually Jason's phrase.
Oh.
We stole it.
We do steal from each other.
Yes,
often.
That's
yes,
great.
And I stole the phrase from Marcus Roberts. There, but anyway.
But it's yours now. So Native Jazz Quartet tonight at the Jack, 7 p.m. Be there. Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday, the 8th of April, 2013. It's the birthday of Barbara Kingsolver, born in Annapolis, Maryland, 1955, grew up in a house in an alfalfa field in rural Kentucky. Her dad was a country doctor down there. When she was 7, her father moved the family to the Congo for a year so he could work as a medical missionary. Came back to Kentucky, and she kept on keeping her journal, eventually writing stories and poems. She was a tall, thin, bookish girl. She said, I wanted to read Anna Karenina, and everybody else wanted to do stuff in the back of cars. She was a good writer. She was a good pianist. She thought it was impractical to major in music, so she majored in biology instead. Moved to Tucson, wrote a thesis on termite behavior for her master's degree. Got a job doing technical writing. She entered a short story contest sponsored by an alternative weekly in Phoenix, and won it, kept on writing stories. Then she got pregnant and developed insomnia, so at night she would take her typewriter into the closet and write. Realized that she was writing a novel about a young woman desperate to escape her life in rural Kentucky and moved to Tucson, and that novel was The Bean Trees, got good reviews when it came out in 1988. Wrote two more novels, and then one about a missionary family in the Belgian Congo, based on the journal she had kept as a girl. She did a lot of research for it, memoirs of missionaries, and she studied the Kikongo language and read the Bible over and over, traveled to Central Africa. And after many years, she published The Poisonwood Bible. It was a huge bestseller when it came out in 1998. Barbara Kingsolver, who said, "The best research gets your fingers dusty and your shoes dirty, especially because a novel is made of details. I had to know what a place smelled like, what it sounded like. There's no substitute for that." And it's the birthday of the investigative journalist who broke the story of the My Lai massacre, Seymour Hersh, born Chicago, 1937. Started out as a copy boy for the Chicago City News Bureau, worked for the Associated Press, had a hard time getting the story of the My Lai massacre published. Life magazine, Look magazine turned it down, but it was sold to newspapers through a little syndicate, and it made Seymour Hersh's reputation. He won the Pulitzer Prize for it in 1970. Here's a poem for today by George Bilger, Threepenny Opera. The elderly modern dance instructor and his elderly wife are dancing in top hats and tails, doing a court vial number as old as their marriage. They've reached that age when the body is starting to wonder how it got here, when it has become strange even to itself and moves around uncertainly as if looking for a lost pair of glasses. They do not mean for what they're doing to be a parody, but of course it is. The word means something like to sing alongside, and it's just possible to see the life dark lovers they used to be singing just beyond the penumbra of the spotlight when they tap dance and set their old skeletons clattering across the stage. The teenage boy in front of me smiles and nudges his girlfriend who has reached the moment of her beauty that will keep everyone on the edge of their seats for the next 2 or 3 years. Threepenny Opera by George Bilger from his collection The Good Kiss, published by the University of Akron Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Reputation.com, helping individuals and businesses make their best impression where people learn about them first, on the Internet. Learn more at 1-800-REPUTATION. Produced by Kathy Roach, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Hello, you're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO. We just listened to Garrison Keillor and talking about keeping people at the edge of the seats on the phone. I have Dan Henry, who is from the Northwoods Writers Symposium, which is going to take place at the end of May in Skagway. And I think at that symposium, you'll be taught, if you're a writer, how to keep people on the edge of their seats. Dan, are you on the phone?
I certainly am, Joan. Hi.
How are you today?
Doing well.
Great. So I looked about this writer symposium. That's who you've got lined up this year. It looks fantastic. That's May 29 to June 1 in Skagway, correct?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. So can you tell us a little bit about the symposium, generally speaking, and then we'll talk about the specifics of this year's lineup?
Yeah. Generally, myself, along with Buckwheat Donahue and Jeff Brady, who's the manager, owner of the Skagway News a few years ago, decided it was time to have a writers' conference in Southeast Alaska that really worked with people on, number one, inspiring them and taking their talents and all the writing that people do in Southeast Alaska, and then, number two, putting it out there, somehow getting in print and educating people, or at least letting people know how they can move their writing into more of a public eye.
And there's quite a few Southeast Alaskans who have done that.
Absolutely. And along the way, you know, many of those people are faculty members, and they all have great stories and thoughts about the craft of doing that, of putting good stories together, good scripts together, and then somehow getting it out to the audience, which sometimes can be a mystery. And, you know, another part of the symposium, and this is our fourth annual, is that we really wanted a writer's symposium to be fun. And not just be bread and water and thinking deeply, but also a time to interact with people and eat well. We even put people on the train, and we have an experience with that, and kind of an old-fashioned cookout out in Dai, and different sorts of things. So we really try to host a good time as well as hopefully an enlightening time.
That sounds great. I want to get into the logistics of it, but first I want to talk about your lineup because we don't have a huge amount of time. Your keynote speaker is Kathleen Dean Moore, and she has many books. The most recent one is Moral Ground, Ethical Action for a Planet in Peril. She'll be your keynote author, but when I looked on your site today, you have lots of Southeast Alaskans. You have Heather Lende, you have Lynn Schooler, you have John Straley, Dave Hunsaker. Hey.
Right. All those folks. We have lots of Southeast Alaskans. Let me just run that down. Yeah, one more time. John Straley, of course, from Sitka. Kim Hecox from Gustavus. Lynn Schooler from Juneau. Also, Heather Lende from Haines. And then from Anchorage, Andromeda Romano Locks. And she runs 49
Writers. Mm-hmm.
And has also published a lot of guidebooks in Alaska, and recently has two major fiction pieces. Exciting. David Hunsaker. Dave Hunsaker is well known to Juneau people. He's worked a long time with Perseverance Theater, and I think even at this date, he is the one Alaskan who is in the Screen Guild as an actual screenplay writer. He's just finished writing and working on the movie for Firecracker Boys, and he also has a new graphic novel out. And then one other person on the faculty, Howard Weaver. Of course, many Alaskans know him. He's former editor of Anchorage Daily News and won two Pulitzers and also has a new memoir out. So lots of great Alaskan writers, plus Kathleen Dean Moore, who's also Alaskan part-time because she lives in Tenneke during the summertime.
Okay, interesting. And then speaking of the Alaskan aspect of the symposium, people could get credit at UAS. Is that correct?
That is correct. They can get 1, 2, or 3 credits. And so if you are a teacher or a student or somebody who needs credits, you can go there and for a certain amount of, write a paper and view a few people, then you can obtain UAS credit. That's correct.
That's good. Okay, so let's talk about the symposium. It's, Wednesday through Saturday, is that correct?
Yep, that's right. Wednesday night.
May 29th.
That's right. We have a big taco feed and upstairs in the Red Onion and sort of meet and greet and get a chance to know each other that way. And then Thursday morning we start in with a number of sessions. And some of the sessions are all together. Some of the sessions are sort of breakouts. There's a variety of those. Do you want me to go through some of the names of the sessions?
I think I'd like to. I'm not sure if we have the time for that. If we come back to it, but let's throw in that contact information right now. So Dan, if people are interested to learn about the specific sessions or anything about the symposium, where do they go?
Right. Well, easily enough, you can just go to www.nwwwriters.com. That's Northwards Writers Symposium. And .com, or you could just put Skagway Symposium, it'll pop you up right up.
Right, you could just do a search on that. So what's the cost of this? So let's say I'm a Juneauite, which I am, and I might be interested, which I am.
Right.
What's the cost of the event, and where does one stay, and so on and so forth?
Yeah, the logistics are this. People usually just ferry up, of course, or fly up, depending. They get to Skagway. The cost for all the sessions and the conference itself, which also includes all but two meals too, is I think it is $350 or $349 or something like that now. Don't quote me on that for sure. It's
in that range. You could check it out on the website for sure. And then you have to deal with your lodging on your own.
And the deal with your lodging, and people do it in different ways, of course, camp, have friends, stay in a motel, different things.
Okay. All righty. Well,
yeah, and we're just very excited. We have a great faculty, and I did what just if I could, if can I have 10 seconds to mention a couple of topics we'll be talking about?
Absolutely. Just one more question, and then you could go right into the topics.
Sure.
How many people do you take?
We take up to 50. We last year was our biggest year. We had 38 or something like that, and we'll take up to 50. We have room for that. So people should sign up ahead of time. It's through the Skagway Tourism Program, City of Skagway, and like I said, you can just go to the website.
Okay, great. So let's talk about those sessions that you want to talk about. I know there's many of them, so you're just picking a handful.
Yeah, I'm just going to pick a couple and throw them out to people, but we try, like I said, to deal with the craft as well as the inspiration as well as the marketing. So one, it now is no longer alone in our chairs, the complete digital writer, and we draw our inspiration from a lot of writers out there who are their entire PR business and run everything because that's what you have to do. You have to tweet and twit. And, you know, all that sort of thing. So the complete modern digital writer. We're also looking at there's a personal essay one, one about getting through writer's block, what makes writing flow. Also, Howard Weaver, Pulitzer Prize winner, former editor, talking about confronting the fact of fiction and the fiction of fact. Think about that. And then one for Alaskans, close calls, near-death experiences, and other precarious moments. So we're drawing from all kinds of experiences. People usually come up with a piece of writing, or they've been working on something for a while, or they just want to be inspired, and we have the fuel, we hope, to get them going.
Okay. Dan, we're running out of time, so I just want to say one more time, thank you. It's Dan Henry. I'm talking with Dan Henry about the Northwards Writer Symposium. They have an amazing faculty. It's up in Skagway. It sounds like it's for everyone from the beginner to the accomplished writer. Dan,
absolutely.
Thank you so much for joining the show today.
It's been a real pleasure talking with you, so thanks.
All right. See you in Skagway, maybe. Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, Dan.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ock Bay area, tune to K276 AF 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. We're also online at www.ktoo.org.
You've been listening to Juneau Afternoon. I'm your host, Joan Pardis. The weather tonight is mostly cloudy, rain developing, and rain tonight. Tomorrow, and maybe rain and snow starting Tuesday night. Thanks for listening.
The day before the letters were to be given, you could see it on the faces of some of the workforce. There's true anxiety and just uncertainty in their minds.
The sequester waiting game. When will the across-the-board spending cuts take effect?
It's Monday, April 8th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Audie Cornish.
And I'm Alyssa Block. In this hour, the upcoming uphill battle for the Obama administration's plan for Social Security.
I have done hundreds of town hall meetings with our members, seniors. Believe me, this is not going to be an easy sell.
Also this hour.